You know, I think that the idea that you have now in your school to have this project secretaries is a new idea in any school organization. This idea has emerged from a number of experiments which have been done in different parts of the world. And yet they have not emerged, this idea has not emerged as an articulated idea. I had first suggested this idea in 1984 for Vishwabharati, Shantiniketan. There was an idea to rejuvenate Shantiniketan because although it was established at the beginning of the last century, 1904, Tagore started Shantiniketan. And until 1941, the year in which he passed away, it was a very growing institution and it vibrated with a tremendous atmosphere of innovations, spirit of freedom, and spirit of serenity in the atmosphere. There was a constant flow of creativity in all directions of life. As you know, the former Prime Minister Indira Gandhi was the student of this Shantiniketan for a year during her on schooling period, and she had a direct contact with Tagore. In due course of time, particularly after 1951, this institution began to deteriorate. And when I became education advisor to the Government of India in 1976, Indira Gandhi specially issued a letter to the minister saying that one special task that should be given to me would be to advise on Vishwabharati and to see that Vishwabharati is brought back to its original glory, particularly of creativity. From 76 to 1984, therefore, I was connected with Vishwabharati with an attempt to rejuvenate Vishwabharati. It is during that period that I told the Prime Minister that we must make basic changes in the very constitution of the university, very concept of the university. Our universities are basically manufacturing factories, not sanctuaries of souls. Children are being brought into the university and they are put into the production line, and little by little, bricks are being laid or spare parts are being put together. Ultimately, a product is produced. Even that is inefficiently done in Indian universities. And it is because of the structure of university that the spirit of university does not flourish. The structure is prefabricated. It doesn't grow from within. And therefore, that prefabricated structure does not allow teachers to be innovative. Even innovation of the teachers is thwarted. Structures are laid down and you can't do anything more than that. Vice Chancellor, who is called Kulapati, is administratively so much loaded, he doesn't know where is Kula. So how does he know what is Kulapati? It is because the structure is such that Kulapati is given the charge of administration. It's a kind of a mismatch. Kulapati should be the keeper of the family. If he is loaded with administration, he has hardly any time to look after the family. Kulapati, to be a real Kulapati, should be a free man moving among the members of the family, meeting children, teachers, talking to them like a great grandfather speaking to the children. That is Kulapati. That should be the time available to the Kulapati. But the structure of university in India is so conceived that a heavy load of administrative and financial responsibilities are laid upon him. So I had lots of discussions with educationists all over the country. In fact, I had the chance of meeting hundreds of teachers and professors in the country to discuss this important problem. Is it possible to create a new structure? And my experience was quite disappointing experience, because even the best teachers of the country, they believe that university should be what it is. That there can be another kind of university structure. Even that idea was not floating anywhere. So I had a great difficulty. So whatever I wanted to do about new structure for the university, it could not be achieved. So even now, in 85, I created a new act of the parliament for Vishwabharati, tried to give some new elements in it. But from 85 to the present day, there have been three other committees to examine how to rejuvenate Vishwabharati. This is our difficulty with our education system at a very high level. Similarly, in the school, principals and vice principals are very busy with administration and finance, discipline of the school, timetable making, and what is called a real internal, intimate work of a vice principal and principal is discharged only by those individuals who are by nature inclined towards personal relationship with teachers and pupils. Therefore, only those principals become really successful who have both the abilities of administrative and financial discharge of responsibilities plus relationship with teachers and pupils. There are not many in the country. Now, since Anjaliji is now looking after your school, I feel it's a great boon has come to your school, because she is one of those forward-looking educationists who wants to create something new. And fortunately, you are all very lucky, because your school is one of the best schools of India. I am told one of the first 10 schools of India. And you have a large number of students, 3,000 and more perhaps. You have a setting which is very propitious for experimentation. There are many people in the country who believe, do not try to change. Everything is all right. Make it efficient. Lubricate with the oil of industry, diligence, application, and everything is all right. You will get highest 100% results and you will get a great clap. This is all that many teachers in our country, many principals in our country, education's country believe. And that is why in the school system, we have very few schools which are innovative. Is it possible to make this school not only what it is, already it is efficient, but also innovative? also vibrating with new waves of creativity. This is the question that she has been discussing with me, which is a privilege for me because not many teachers and students or administrators or organizers or financiers in our country care about this question. Now, as a result of a lot of thinking on the subject of innovative and creativity, which is necessary in any school, I have come to the conclusion this is also experimental. So I am not here to tell you what you ought to do. I am only sharing with you my ideas so that we can mature them. Just now I was reading what she has done for Indian nationalism, and it was a good lesson for me because what she has done for young children, it was a good lesson that she has prepared for parents, for children, and certain ideas which she has identified for nationalism for children. Very innovative ideas are presented in 3-4 pages which I read just now. So I know that in our country, teachers have thought a lot, but they do not get the chance of introducing any innovations because they are in a routine of timetable making and fulfilling the responsibilities of the timetable. Besides, our teachers are so heavily loaded with work. The homework correction itself is a very heavy work, and which most of the teachers don't take into account. I mean, administrators don't take into account, and they feel it is, of course, understood. And yet homework correction is one of the most important works of the teachers. And many people don't realize this at all. When they say, how many hours you are teaching? I had asked the mother once a question, what is the ideal load of a teacher that you should ask from a teacher? So normally 8 hours is the workload. So mother said, 3 hours per day should be given to teaching work, actually. This is the ideal. 3 hours. Out of 8 hours, no teacher should be given a load more than 3 hours. Why? Because a lot of time is to be given to the children. As though talking to a child in the class is not a looking after children. When you look at the homework, you are actually coming into a real concrete touch with the children. It's not only when you are talking to the children in the classroom, but when you are looking into the notebook of the child, you are in contact with the child. This work is not normally counted. And therefore, our administration of the school is normally a kind of a clamp on the teachers. And teachers also try to do homework correction as fast as possible. There's not much time because then particularly in India, our women teachers have a tremendous domestic responsibilities. It's a fact. I mean, you have to reckon this fact that they have to look after so many things at home, and even the husbands and their friends are not very kind to the demands they make upon their housewives. This is a psychological, sociological fact. And therefore, when they are appointed as teachers, there is a very difficult situation in which our teachers are placed. They have to do the work for students as full time. 24 hours devoted to the work, as everyone is supposed to. And yet, it is not recognized, not reckoned, and therefore the load of work that is given to teachers is very heavy. Our Indian women are very brave, and they have been able to do a lot, which women would normally place themselves in a revolting state of mind. But our Indian women have been able to bear the brunt of this new civilization, keeping the old civilization on and absorbing the new civilization and the responsibilities of new civilization and keeping some kind of equilibrium. Our homes are not broken down. Teachers' homes particularly are much better, and children are being looked after much better. And I find that if you take a statistical view of the teachers' homes, among all the homes in the country, teachers' homes are happier, which is, it is very remarkable. It's a fact.
Even I think so.
Isn't it?
Yes.
It's a fact.
I
True,
think
because yeah, it is, it's wonderful actually. And yet teachers are being taxed so much. My heart is always in favor of teachers because I really feel that they are doing extraordinarily great work in our country.
And teachers must also feel very much academically. Teachers want also be much more better academically than ordinary parents.
Yes, you are right, because child upbringing is a specialty of a teacher. So, and then many teachers like her are psychologists. So, no, study of psychology, according to me, is a very important sine qua non for every teacher, not only for psychology teacher, but for every teacher. Psychology is the fundamental subject of teaching. To be a teacher is to be a psychologist. So, as I said, keeping in view that real task of the teacher is not merely to give classes, to encounter children in the classroom, but also, and more fundamentally, elsewhere, in the homework, for example. You know, in my own life, there was a revolution when, as you know, I have worked in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram for 20 years. And I am not a trained teacher. I have not undergone a training for teachership, nor was education my actual subject. I was trained to be an administrator. I had done my IAS and resigned from there and gone to the ashram. And then I grew as a teacher, ultimately. So I was always asking this question, what is the role of the teacher? Sometimes you do your job better when you are foreigner to your task, because you come with some kind of freshness. And mother once said, the basic task of teacher is not teaching. And it was a revolutionary statement. And she said, the basic task of teacher is to observe the children. For me, it was a revolutionary statement. To be told that teaching is not your basic task. Observing the children is your basic task. And she said that a system in which teachers do not have the chance to observe the children, their system can never be a living system. And when you examine this statement, you'll find it is so profoundly important that our schooling system, educational system, is so organized that you hardly have time to observe the children. It's exactly the opposite. Therefore, if you want to innovate system of education, I thought, you should find some teachers in the school who voluntarily feel happy to observe the children. There should be a few teachers in a school who can say, I love children and see how they are growing. It's a joy to see a child growing, to see how the muscles of the child are developing, how the agility of the child is developing. Agility of the body, agility of the mind, agility of creativity, of the spirit. How these faculties are growing. So I'm sure that in every school there must be some teachers who are deeply interested in this, psychologically. I mean, not that you are taught how to observe, but you like to observe. It's like, you know, some people have big gardens around, but they hardly take care to see the flowers. They take it for granted. The flowers are flowers, good, very fine, beautiful. But there are people who live in a garden and every day they see how the plant is growing, how the fresh leaves are growing, and how the flowers bloom. And you spend time because you enjoy it. I'm sure there are many presidents of India who have Mughal gardens available in their Rashtrapati Bhavan, but they don't have the time to move about in the Mughal gardens to see the gardens and the beauty. They are open to the people who come and enjoy, but not Rashtrapati himself or herself. There are exceptions, of course. But the point is that all children are around in the school. Not all may be interested in seeing the children's growth or to look upon children as roses which are in bloom or in the process of blooming. But some teachers at least would love to do it. Why? Because it's the health of the teachers themselves. So I had told her, I said, you should voluntarily see in your school, are there teachers who bloom with the children themselves, who rejoice the smile of the children, and feel the vibration of the soul of the children. Every child is a precious treasure. It's a kind of a bud which is growing petal by petal and would like to help. Actually, nobody can help a lot. The help that you can give to a rose to bloom is only perhaps to put some water and allow sunshine to come. But the growth takes place because the very force of the plant and the very nature of the rose and the bud itself to grow and to force by itself to grow out. So our role is modest. All teachers' role is modest. That modest role is very important. So I have felt that a good school should have a few teachers at least who love to see the blooming of children. Similarly, there are even young students who are enthusiastic. They may be not very scholarly. And normally, you find that extremely serviceable. They may not learn as scholarly children might learn, but whatever they learn, they feel so happy about it. They become contagious. This was my experience of my school. There were at least 12 children in my school who were not scholars. So you should have, there are children always in a school who are enthusiastic. Now to underline the word enthusiasm 10 times is very important. Not all children are enthusiastic. You know, when I see teachers, I feel very happy. Mm-hmm. My breakfast, everything is contained in my talking to. Teachers are very precious in this country, in the world. Mm-hmm. And so enthusiastic children, to mark out an enthusiastic child, And to encourage that enthusiasm, and how to encourage enthusiastic children, these are very important problems to be dealt with. And they are not normally part of anybody's work. Nobody says, please tell me who are enthusiastic children and how you've been able to help them. This is never examined. It's not an item for your testing. But it's very important to give a push to enthusiastic children in the right direction is one of the fundamental works of those who have possibility of giving that push to the children. But normally in a school, nobody has a responsibility. In a school, principal and vice principal, if they are good people, they might do something, but their work is so heavy, they don't have the time. Teachers have no responsibility either. They only go to classes, they do homework, fine. And some very good teachers are doing their work conscientiously. But the same work can be done also mechanically. And we should be frank about it, that many teachers, their work were quite mechanically. And satisfy themselves. Work is done. And nobody can claim anything more than that. But if there are possibilities in a given school of giving special responsibilities to a few teachers and say, look, you have no position to do a work because you're in a position is a lower motivation. But to give a responsibility without a special position is a privilege. So I was talking to Anjaliji. I said, one of the ideas that I have nurtured as a result of a lot of experiments is that in a school, you should encourage and recognize a few teachers who have a natural love for children and who want to bloom with the children and who would like to take responsibility to give a push to enthusiasm which is in the school. Enthusiasm is a contagious healing process, not a disease, but a contagious healing process. If you encourage one enthusiastic child, it will spread among 10 children. So to mark out the enthusiastic child and to give him or her a special attention and to allow that enthusiasm to run among the peers of the children is one of the key factors in developing a good school, happier school, blooming school. So this is the idea I gave to Vishwabharati when I was making this act. And I proposed that there should be 4 directors, apart from the Vice-Chancellor and Pro-Vice-Chancellor and Pro-Chancellor. All these are high-sounding designations. There should be directors specially charged for certain specific things who will promote those very things which are normally neglected. So if you pick up those important activities through which the lubrication of the school is not merely for efficiency, but for innovation and for creativity and for nurturing the children's souls, then the school will have a different fragrance. Efficiency-wise, it may not look different. But happiness-wise, it will be much better. So that is why I thought that when she came, I said we should have something similar to what I proposed for Vishwabharati, And during the last 25 years, it has still not been implemented, which is also an important factor. I have put in the Act of the Parliament these four posts, and these four posts are held without a discharge of responsibilities. Posts are held because you get more pay, because in the new system, there is always this lucrative aspect of a post. But we decided that in our school, we shall not create a special post of that kind. That shall be purely voluntary. And let them work out. Let them feel fulfilled that this is a very important, interesting work, and let us work on it. This is the background. And then she said, why should I not talk to you, all of you? I said, all right, I'll be very happy, provided that you bind with me for 10 years. Because I do not like to do a work mechanically. In one meeting, not much can be done. It's a constant process. And there should be... No?
Yes. I do agree.
And there should be a gradual process and gradual give and take. And I don't look upon myself as a leader of education, but as a contributor to education. And I think everyone is in a process of learning. We are all learning. I do not know if I can give you any tips as to how one should go about. I can only share with you what I have learned. And I would like to learn from you. For example, I told you that the morning when I read your paper, I learned from it. It's a very educative paper for it by itself. To see how a work is given and how somebody reacts to it, and what creativity comes out of it. She has, as you know, taken the task of nationalism and internationalism. It's a very important subject and very difficult subject. How to have in your atmosphere a real growth of nationalism among children. And also the concept of Vasudeva Kutumbakam, the whole earth is one family. Now similarly, we have identified a few topics, and as you all know, that there should be, first of all, a very big work of innovations in education, what is called at present academic, although to my mind everything is academic, and I would not like to make a distinction between academic and non-academic. Education is all that a child is concerned with. Play, work, study, thinking, reflecting, meditating, contemplating, and building up relationships, friendships, battles of life, all that is part of education. But still there is this big question of what are called at present academic studies. Languages, mathematics, science, history, geography, civics, and many other subjects which are being added more and more to load up the children. So these are all academic studies. And there is physical education and yoga. And there is also the question of like nationalism, internationalism, which is not an academic subject as such. And yet, it is perhaps one of the most important subjects to be attended by any good school. Similarly, at present, there are, of course, art classes, music classes, dance classes, and something of that is always now being recognized. But still, in this mindset of teachers and students, what we call academic studies is the central part. Yes, others are co-curricular. So, it's a pernicious distinction. But anyway, at present it is so, we start where we are. But even with regard to these academic studies, at present there is not much thinking of innovations. What is innovation? We do not know. How to develop innovations in a school is a further problem. To operationalize an innovation is another problem. To create a climate in which an innovation can take root is also a big problem. I do not know who among you is looking after innovations in education. So let me speak first of all about this subject, because innovations in education have three thrusts. Innovations in objectives of education, in contents of education, and methods of education. For example, one of the most important thrusts in the objective education is education for the complete person. This is a subject on which he wrote a book, perhaps you have got a copy. It's innovation in objectives of education. This is an objective which has come very much in the limelight during the last 20 years. Holistic education, integral development of the child, to look upon the child as a whole, not as tidbits, but as a whole. Can there be this ideal? And does our system, methods and contents, do they correlate very well with this aim? The very fact that you have got classes in languages, history, geography, science, you already make divisions. Are these divisions necessary? They are. Right from the beginning, I believe they are necessary. And yet, if you think that education should be for the whole child, there should be some integrating. So this is one of the first subjects on which attention has to be paid by all of you. The reason why I said I will talk to all of you together is that there are some overarching ideas which I should share with all. Apart from your specific work that you, each one is supposed to concentrate upon, they are overarching ideas. And all your works are actually results of satisfying some overarching ideas. Take, for example, the subject of nationalism and internationalism. It's something to do with the integralism of the child. You cannot build child's nationalism by cutting the child into so many aspects. Child as a whole should be dedicated to his nation, its integrity, its unity, its ideals, its values, and promotion of these values all over. It is not that only through history you can learn nationalism, and through language you cannot, and that through sports you cannot. It's a holistic subject. To discover holistic subjects itself is an innovation. What are the holistic subjects? For example, this nationalism, internationalism is a holistic subject. Another which is very important is evolution, is a holistic subject. Evolution is evolution of the totality of human being. Therefore, evolution is another subject which is holistic. To develop the theory of evolution, study of evolution among children, is to allow the child to expand his consciousness in a holistic manner. Very subject itself demands holistic development. A third subject which is holistic is world history. In a sense, world history is a sub-subject of evolution itself. But still, one can consider world history also as a holistic subject. Psychology is a holistic subject. When you learn psychology, you learn the individuality as a whole. And you learn individual and society and the relationship also as a whole. It's a holistic subject. Philosophy is a holistic subject. Now you will see that these subjects at present do not find place in our curriculum at all. And yet we speak of integralism. Integral subjects are hardly having any place. There is, of course, a very healthy movement today in the world when it is said, philosophy for children. At one time, philosophy was relegated to BA, MA and higher levels. It is a fortunate thing that today many educations are thinking that we should have philosophy for children. Why? Because philosophical thinking is a holistic thinking. The moment you begin to speak of philosophy, you speak of the whole universe. Because what is philosophy basically? It is to determine what is the totality of the universe. And if there is something beyond the universe, if at all, it is a study of that which is beyond, 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 beyond. A search of the ultimate, if at all there is such an ultimate. And then the place of man in the ultimate. This is philosophy. And if children begin to think about it from childhood, the personality will be holistic. But this subject is eliminated from our system. One of the reasons why I criticize Macaulay's system or the present system is that in our traditional system of education, the history of which is not very well known, even among experts, the colonial system systematically threw out of the system all that was holistic. It is one of the important things that Macaulay's system has done in the country. All that was holistic in our system of education is eliminated. Even in the West, holistic education was not important because the cultural development was on different lines. It is now, recently, that people begin to feel that holistic education is very important. Because of certain crises through which mankind is passing, we do feel that this is very important. And this subject came to highlight, to be highlighted through UNESCO's report on learning to be. And this report defined learning to be in a holistic manner. When will an individual feel that he is? experience of being cannot come about unless you are whole. This is the basic truth of psychology. Every individual is seeking to be. This is what is known as feeling identity, search for identity, search for selfhood, search for self-possession. Human beings are unhappy because they are not self-possessed. When you can put yourself as if you are apart from yourself and put yourself in your palm, and you can say, this is myself and I am a sculptor of my being, and I can sculpt my personality according to the need. The capacity to do this is self-being. Then you say, I exist. And most of the human beings are torn apart because they do not know. They don't have this experience of holding here on the palm what is one's being. So education should ultimately aim at this experience of being. Now in our system, there was at one time a great place for education, for being. Learning to be is not new for India. It was ancient times that was Atmajnana, Brahmajnana, was actually education to learning to be. We used a different terminology, but basically it was that. And Brahma Vidya was the central subject of our education. But colonial system took that subject out, saying it is religious, and religion is a matter for everybody to do at home. School system should not have any place for it. Fortunately today, even in the West, people feel the need for religious education. There's a lot of controversy about it. Spiritual education, if not spiritual, religious education, spiritual education, it's a big subject of study and a pregnant subject actually, because a lot of things are needed to be done to develop the profit. But unless teachers think about the subject will not grow. This is one difficulty with the colonial system. Learning to be is set aside, and afterwards when we talk of it, we try to bring in somehow, these are the subjects which you cannot touch. The scheme you cannot touch because it is given by CBSE. Then you don't tell something here, something there, from somewhere, and ultimately our Indian teachers are very good. We are successful in a way because our cultural background is great. And we are able to give to our children certain things automatically, as it were. But it is not called a deliberate system of education. And therefore, our education system is not so satisfactory. So this is one subject of innovation. How to create in our system of education this aim of learning to be? It's a very difficult subject. As I said, it requires 10 years of interaction to develop something that is innovatively relevant and practicable, and that too to put the subject in the framework of the present limitations of our system of education is very difficult. It is from this point of view that this identification of subject, the aim of life, is one subject which is not taught anywhere at all. But if in the atmosphere that subject is made operative, it will do something, not fully, but it will do something to contribute to this education of learning to be, aim of life, because this is one subject which is also holistic. The moment you ask what is the aim of life, even to ask a question and let the question remain in the minds of children, in a sense, is enough. To tell the children that aim of life is something to be decided by you. You look around to explore the subject. There is no prescription. Explore yourself. And to tell the children, listen, you are free. This message is very difficult to give to the present children because children are not free. Parents are asking children always to become first. They are not free. And to tell them, look, you are free, is something contrary to the present system of education. Children are told there is a tight competition in the world. You should be smart. Now, there are many nice children, docile children, who are not smart. And they are being, as if they are punished for not being smart. As if not being smart is a kind of a defect of personality, which is not. There is something like innocence, something which is very questioning. He's never sure of anything. It's how nice it is. And we don't appreciate at all a child who's dashing and is eloquent and threshes out his view against everybody else. He's smart. Competitively, he's very bright. He's spotted. Here is a bright child because he speaks out in the classroom. But how many good children are innocently listening, asking, questioning, very docile? We hardly give any importance to it. It is these children who are really the true leaders. Not so-called smart children. Not that smartness is bad, but we always give an importance of what is called at present, develop confidence. Nothing wrong about it. Develop confidence. But we never tell children how to develop confidence. It's not easy to develop confidence. Confidence is not a style. It's not mannerism. It's not the way in which you behave. Confidence building requires a lot of concentrated work. A child is going to exam. Child, be confident, huh? How can he be confident when he doesn't know the answer to the question? What is the confidence? He will have confidence if he knows the answer to the question. You don't need to teach him again, now be confident. Instead of saying, be confident, you say, you learn properly, truly. Confidence will grow automatically. It's a result, it's a flower by itself. Now, it is this kind of wrong emphasis that we put in our education and create a wrong kind of population. Aggressiveness, violence, competitive success, and being first. There was a beautiful sentence which Mother told me once. Do not try to be first, but try to do your best. This is a mantra for the new world. Do not try to come first. Try to do your best. Now, to give this mantra, how this idea should percolate among your students. We see in our school, Mother herself used to be the referee of competition. And she used to be seated at the central place and children used to sprint around her. And she would wait until the last child has finished the sprinting. Normally, when the first is decided, finish, the competition is over. But she would wait until the last child has done his full, whatever is to be done, even if it takes half an hour more, every one of us had to remain in this ground to watch the last child. Because he's doing his best. What is the value of what he's doing? This is the new attitude that has to be developed among students and teachers and the schools. Do not value only the first one who comes the first. Wait for the last one.
Competition with oneself.
Pardon?
Competition with oneself.
If at all, even with oneself also is a question. The idea of competition itself smacks of this egoism, self-improvement. To say, you might say, it is to put accelerator on your limitations. To reach your point of limitation and to put accelerator on it, that is the mark of excellence. The child, every child should be told that he is first if he does more than what his limitations can permit him to do. That is excellence. In a sense, I am rambling with you because there are so many things to be told at the same time, but you will see there is a method in it. It is to build up the idea that innovations in education, the first is holism as an objective of education, and in holism to discover holistic subjects is an important task. And among them, I gave nationalism, internationalism, world history, evolution, and aim of life. Pardon? Culture also.
In fact, evolution is not one of them.
Pardon?
Evolution has not been tagged.
Underlined.
It has not been tagged.
But we shall do it. I mean, yes. This is the result of our talk. It also should come on as one of the important subjects for us, holistic subjects. We need to develop a new curriculum which is centered on learning to be. Centered. It's a subject which we shall discuss later on, but there is a need to develop a new curriculum. This is the subject on which not much can be done in a school which is run under the scheme of CBSE. I think you are what is it?
ICSE.
International.
No, Indian student service.
Huh? Indian
school certificate exam.
Oh, so ISC.
Council for Certificate Education.
So that is your system. So there is a system which is given to you and you have got to satisfy it. And there you can't have new curriculum.
We can, up to class 8 we can.
Yeah, you can, but you know there are...
Class 8 there is no curriculum given by the board. We can teach anything that we want, so long as the children are being prepared to appear for the...
That's class. It. So that is a limitation on it. Anyway, I think that your school can be a good institution for creating a new curriculum in due course of time, 20 years. But ultimately, we should be able to create a new curriculum which we can give to the country. I am very interested in your school because she happens to be the vice president of your school and I have great chances of meeting her. So it's an organic relationship which I have with you all. And this is very precious for me. So if you can, sometimes you can organize it. We shall have, if possible, you bring some of your teachers on Saturday, Sunday, if they are free from their homework. We can spend 2 days only on new curriculum. Because at least teachers should think about it. Even if you can't implement it, you should think about it. You do need to have a new curriculum in due course of time for the country's sake. Now that is one area of innovations in education. The aim of life and a new curriculum. Another area of innovations in education is regarding methodology. Here again, our methodology of education is very limited in our present system of education. We largely do it through lectures. Some good teachers have some projects, some seminars, some exhibitions. These are all good innovations in methodology. So to increase your work, I would suggest one more innovation in methodology. And that is to create a laboratory. While doing many experiments in education at the ashram where I had the great privilege of 20 years of experimentation in complete freedom, the reason why I feel so happy in my life about is that I had the privilege of working under the freest individual, the mother herself, the freest individual in the world, the most revolutionary personality on the earth, and who did not impose any limitation upon any teacher or any student. And therefore, we had a complete freedom to innovate. And as a result of this, the one idea which has sprung in me, at least, is to develop the idea of a laboratory. I use the word laboratory only because it's a word which is not very much opposed. I would use some other word, but anyway, I use the word laboratory because people do know that there is physics laboratory, chemistry laboratory, and biology laboratory, and home science laboratory. It is these laboratories are well known. But to speak of laboratory of literature is an innovative idea, which I would very much like to advocate. To have a laboratory of mathematics is an innovative idea. A laboratory of history and civics or geography is an innovative idea. In other words, I do believe that there should be an institution of a laboratory in every school. And this is an idea I would like to discuss with all of you because it's not only one person's work. Everyone, in every department, you need to have a laboratory. The nearest idea to a laboratory is ICU in a medical college, intensive care units. Everybody accepts that every medical institution should have an ICU. Why? Because patients do pass through that stage. We don't see that in education there is a need of ICU. The recent film, Tare Zameen Par, has shown the need of such an ICU when a child was suffering from dyslexia. In that context, you might say that this idea may not now look so strange because today there is a climate in which many parents and teachers have come to realize that there is a need to identify those children who are suffering because something is missing. and nobody is bothered about. And you go on demanding from the child what you demand from everybody else.
We Pardon? Have a system in our school, sir. We have a clinical psychologist and she is there for this purpose. Though it's on a, I think...
Good, it's good just to have some psychologist. It's good to have a psychologist, but what is ICU, what is truth about ICU is in the extreme cases. Tare Zameen Par showed only one extreme case. But we don't recognize that most of the children require it. This is not recognized. You might say that almost every child at a given stage of his development requires an ICU. I was one of bright students in my school, and yet I never understood what is geometry. Up to my pre-matric class, I did not understand what is geometry. I was still bright because I could remember theorems and the answers and all that. Nobody could catch up or did not know. One teacher had a great insight. He spotted me and said, "Kirit, you don't understand geometry." He was so kind, he sat down with me for 1 hour and said, "Geometry is not in the book. Geometry is in your mind." It was a revelation to me that geometry is not in the book, it is in the mind. So proof is not given there. Put a question to your mind and ask questions and proof will come out of it. It was a big revolution in my development. Now, I was a patient of ICU, actually. Now, this is a problem with a number of children in all schools in the world, in all the schools. There are some subtle points at which children are stuck. And they do not know how to cross. And there is nobody to look into it. You go on hammering. This is not right. But why? There must be a place which I call now laboratory. For every subject, there should be a laboratory. Some of the common problems where many children are stuck is, why should I study this subject? It's a very important subject and many teachers themselves are not able to answer this question. Why should I be busy learning what I'm asked to learn? And it is not that all teachers are such experts that they can answer a question why you should do. In my school, for example, I had a natural tendency to do sports and physical education. But in the atmosphere in the school, we were told, if you do physical education, one day you'll fall. You'll break your bone. And if you break your bone, afterwards in your whole life, you'll be limping. This was the atmosphere, and I don't think that atmosphere is completely changed. And this danger is not something artificial, it is there. In physical education, to expect that you will grow up without falling is not possible. How do you interact and how do you react to this question? Why should I do physical education? I was told, to be very frankly, only Muslims should do physical education. Why? Because they want to fight. We Hindus don't fight. Therefore, we don't need to do physical education. Now imagine, this was the atmosphere of our whole town. Hindu boys and girls should not do physical education at all. It's a waste of time. Study. That is important. Why do you want to do physical education? Waste your time 2 hours, 3 hours a day? It's a very important subject and very important question. And our children don't get a correct answer. Even today, I am quite sure. Why should children be doing physical education? Today, of course, because of sports, they see so much of television, of sports and so on. There's a craze for it. But if you ask the question, why? What is the real fundamental reason why your body should be trained physically? This question is not answered. There should be a laboratory of physical education where this question is answered properly, fully in due course of time. First properly and then fully in due course of time. It's a very important question. Shariram adyam khalu dharma sadhanam. This is an adage in Sanskrit. The healthy body is a necessity for the performance of the ideals of life. If you want to really perform ideals in your life, physical health is absolutely indispensable. Value of beauty, for example. In our many Orthodox families, beauty is hardly regarded as a value. You look like whatever, you don't comb the hair, put whatever dress, you just get out of your home. You don't, even wearing chappals, you just wear as if it's a burden to you. And when you throw out the chappals, you throw out as if unnecessarily you don't need it. You don't even know that chappals should be put rightly in a good manner, like Japanese method of putting out your shoes and chappals and so on. It's a part of physical education. Your body should be so trained, so beautifully organized, that your actions, reactions are absolutely perfect, beautiful. It's a part of physical education. To look beautiful is nothing wrong about it. Beauty is a part of life. Beauty has its own value. And everybody should develop physical body so that body remains beautiful. And as long as possible. Therefore, there should be a laboratory. I don't dilate upon the subject at length, but physical education should have a laboratory where this question is answered. Why physical education? You know, many children do not take to physical education because of this reason. They do not know why. And many people give up physical education as soon as they start working. They do not know physical education is a lifelong marriage. As long as you remain alive, you should do physical education all over life. This is not sufficiently recognized. It's not only for doing good sports that you require physical education. Even breathing is an important aspect of physical health. Is not sufficiently recognized. We do pranayama and all that, but why? What is oxygen? And how oxygen can really infiltrate into all parts of your body? And many methods of oxygenating your body. All this is to be understood, and this can be done best through a laboratory. In a laboratory, these questions are there. They are answered properly, and they should be able to, when a child says, why should I do physical education, send him to laboratory. And there should be somebody who says, what is your question? Here are answers available. There should be a box of why, what, how. There should be boxes to answer certain questions. Why, what, how. Specific questions, specific answers. Why laboratory? Because in a normal classroom, even when such questions are raised by the children, or even if you answer, they are not underlined. One of the most important things in education is underlining. What is the difference between reading a book and attending a lecture? A lecturer underlines. The very fact that a teacher speaks about something. When my teacher, for example, spoke the speech of Antony, Antony and Cleopatra and Julius Caesar. Why does he speak of Antony's speech? Four lines. Listen to me, and he says, give me, lend your ears. Why? A good lecturer underlines, and that is the advantage of a lecturer. A good lecturer is one who underlines. You may read a book, but you may not underline because you don't see the importance of it. A good lecturer is one who has mastered the subject, and when he speaks in the class, he underlines what is important. But this underlining in most of the schools is hardly done because not many teachers are real good lecturers. They repeat what is in the school, they don't underline. But a laboratory is a place where underlining is specially designed. What is it that you should underline? Emphasis. Where should you put an emphasis? So a laboratory has to be made where what underlining of the subject should be at one place. A laboratory should be able to tell you where normally children fail to cross a barrier. A good psychologist should say that while learning mathematics, these are the barriers which normally children come across. Like geometry, for example, was a barrier to me. A subject was introduced and you are only told here is a theorem. And the teacher does not take care to see that a subject is to be introduced properly. Now we shall do factorization. Good. Child doesn't know what is factorization, why you should do. What is x, what is y, what is common factor, nothing at all. Factorization, and then there is a method of it. You teach the method. But why factorization at all? What is ratio proportion? Why? We don't explain. These are barriers. A good psychologist finds out what are the barriers in learning. In languages, for example, we know that spelling is a big barrier. How many good children, they speak very well, but when they write, the spellings are horrible. Not all, but this is a case very often you come across. Why should there not be a place, ICU, for spelling? A place where a child should be told, now your spellings are weak. You go to the laboratory where spellings are specially taught. There should be a box of exercising spellings, from simple to complex. A graded system of spellings. If you have got 50 exercises of spellings, you'll be master. You have to find out what are the spellings which are really difficult spellings. You are bound to make a mistake. Many people make mistakes, even today. Even educated people make a mistake in spelling because those spellings are particularly difficult. So a good laboratory man finds out what are the difficult spellings in which children have to take a special role. Punctuation, for example. In our schools, normally, we don't teach punctuation in the right manner. Where comma, hyphen, semicolon, full stop. Where they should be used, we don't know. Haphazard we write. That after a comma, there should be another comma to follow because between one comma and the other comma, something qualifying statement is made. But most of the people, including the best educated people today, after comma, they put a qualifying statement, but they don't put comma after that. It's a common mistake everywhere, I find. No, it is true. Because we are not taught. Omar is a very important aspect of learning a language. So a laboratory required for that purpose. You require in a laboratory system of analysis. Power of analysis is a very important power of mental development regarding every subject. Do you teach analysis of any subject? A good teacher, of course, analyzes subject quite nicely. But for a child to do analysis, he's hardly taught. To develop an argument, it requires a special training. How to develop an argument? What is an argument? Similarly, what is synthesis? Just analysis is important, synthesis is also necessary. How to synthesize different ideas? How to collate different ideas? How collation should not be juxtaposition of ideas, but real integration of ideas? There should be exercises available in a laboratory where children are taught. That is to say, and taught by self-education. A laboratory should be so organized that a teacher simply says to a child, you don't know punctuation quite well. You need to go to a laboratory. You go to a laboratory where exercise will be given on punctuation. And exercise are available, you just open the box of punctuation and the whole exercise is given so well that you can do by yourself. In a laboratory, you require one teacher who attends to everybody's needs and can show. It is like executive waiting room in an airport. A person is required to receive somebody, says you can take your seat. The tea is available, biscuits are available, some snacks are available, newspapers are available. You spend your time nicely. The only receptionist only takes down the name and allows you to go into, and if sometimes some inquiry is made, you can show here it is. You require a laboratory man to do this kind of work. And I would like very much in your school to have experimental laboratories for different subjects. It's a very difficult task, but in due course of time, 10 years or so, you should be able to develop a good laboratory, let us say of language. You are a teacher of English. A good language laboratory is not only headphones, which is also necessary. A good language laboratory has also these exercises available of spellings, of construction of sentences, punctuation marks, and composition of analysis, composition of synthesis, various exercises of this kind. We spend too much time in teaching the niceties of poetical figures and images, which is good. But language suffers very often because linguistically we are not competent. And with regard to literature also, literary figures also, we only enjoy as an embellishment. Most of the children do require a very strong basis in spellings, in grammatical constructions. And these are difficult things. Children don't like so much. Therefore, we should have laboratories. When you find this child is not doing well, you should say, go to a laboratory. And I was required to go to a laboratory and pass an examination there, because at the end, in a laboratory, there should be a test paper. And you should pass that test paper. Then you can say, it's not for passing from standard to standard. It is a test paper of spelling at a given level. And that test paper is such that if you have done spelling quite well,
you can come out of ICU.
You can come out of ICU. Correct. Absolutely. You can come out of ICU. You require a laboratory. This system does not exist in our schools, excepting for physics, chemistry, biology. And that too is not designed on this line. Even their laboratories are not designed for this purpose. Take for example geography. Geography is an extremely important subject. In my school I was told, you do mathematics and languages quite well. History, geography are subordinate subjects.
Same situation.
Now this is a pernicious idea. Who says that geography is a subordinate subject? Not so important. Mathematics, yes, that is something king subject. Language, yes.
As you rightly said, sir, even the Lucknow University.
Yes.
In the whole of Lucknow, we are finding it extremely difficult to find good geography teachers.
Really?
Lucknow University doesn't have geography.
Geography teachers at all, now you see. And yet geography is so important. Why? Nobody, there is no paper in a laboratory of geography. Why geography? Even in the school, there is no answer to this question. Why should I learn geography? There is no answer available in the school as a whole. Some good teachers may have answer in their minds. But there is no laboratory in which this answer is officially available to anybody who asks this question. Why not?
And we are dealing with the climate change.
And we are dealing with climate change today. And inconvenient truth of today. Geography is so important because I didn't learn geography myself, so I regard it even more important. Because in our school, geography was regarded as a very, very subordinate subject. Not only subordinate, but very, very subordinate subject. So hardly you attended to it. We used to feel, my Lord, this teacher is showing a map. In our class, suddenly a teacher would open a map in the class on the blackboard, a small map, and then everybody is asked to look into it. Now show where is Sholapur yet. And you don't know, you have never heard Sholapur in your life, and suddenly you find Sholapur in the whole map of India. And one bright student will show, matter is over.
Educom that we have introduced in the school should be able to oversee these problems very majorly.
So good. I mean, let us see. What is important is that importance of the subject should be brought to the notice of the children. Why geography is so important? I always give the example of Shivaji's life. You cannot understand Shivaji unless you know the geography of Pune, Nasik, and some forts, Shivneri and so on. Unless you know these forts, you cannot understand the life of Shivaji. The greatness of Shivaji cannot be understood unless you know the geography. Why Aurangzeb was not able to deal with Shivaji? Because of geography. Now, this is hardly understood. Aurangzeb took a long time before he could conquer. After Shivaji was gone, he was able to conquer that part. But not during his lifetime, because Shivaji was a fortress himself. And he knew the geography of his area, because from his boyhood, he went round on his horseback from boyhood. And he knew what are the strategic places in geography of Pune and the surrounding areas. And he saw that many forts were built by him at strategic points. How can you explain the story of Shivaji and bring out his greatness if you don't teach geography? Same thing about Rana Pratap also. Haldi Ghat cannot be understood unless you know the geography of Haldi Ghat. What is Haldi Ghat? Geography is so important. Why Shivaji was one of the first ones to say that naval power of India should be developed? He lived in the coast area. Many others also lived, but why should he? Even Mughals did not think of naval power to be developed, but he developed it. Why? Because of geographical knowledge. And children should be able to underline these things. And unless you have a laboratory of geography, you will not be able to do it. Even if you say good teachers will always do it, I know. Good teachers are good always. A system is necessary because even good teachers will be able to do their work better if there is a better system. And even bad teachers will be able to do better if there is a good system. Therefore, system is necessary. Very often we were asked the question, all this talk of system is irrelevant. Make good teachers. Now this statement is 70% correct. But don't make it 100% correct. And there's a difference. Systems are very important. The present system of education is bad because the system prevents you from becoming a good teacher. Your good teacher is giving a good lecture now and the bell rings at a psychological moment and the class must stop. Psychologically, this system is pernicious. When you really want to explain something, very you are heated now and the children are all anxious to learn now, bell rings, finished.
That's true.
Right? It's a system. Timetable system. Therefore, systemic change is very important. And this laboratory is one of the systemic changes. A good teacher will find a laboratory very useful. If a child asks a question and the teacher feels that he will require a lot of exercise, you can answer a question, but it will be followed up. And giving a homework is no answer. He must go to the laboratory. If a laboratory is available, you can send him to ICU, saying that now you require an ICU visit. And you do exercises. The system should be available. A good teacher's own teaching methods will improve. So I would like that innovations in education should be able to create laboratories for different subjects. And the minimum that you can do, this is my suggestion to you, is that you should have a computer which has inbuilt laboratories for different subjects. One computer can keep all that what I'm saying. You don't even need a classroom. A child can play on a computer and can have his laboratory on his computer. This is the advantage of the modern times. So at least you can prepare laboratories very easily on a computer. Although I would prefer that computer does not remain only in a computer, you should have a room for every subject. The present people who handle the buildings and so on, they will immediately put their hands off. Lot of expenditure on creating lot of rooms. I would simply plead in due course of time, kindly consider the creation of these rooms. For every subject, you should have one special room of a laboratory. It will make complete difference to the very toning of education in your school. A room where all the maps of the world are available, where you can display one full map of the world on one full wall. It will make a tremendous difference to the children's perception of the world. The map of the universe, if you can put very largely. Why planetariums are necessary? Because when you go to planetarium, you see the sky over your head. The stars can twinkle over your heads. That's why it's so important. But why should our schools not be planetariums? Why should we not? On a small scale, but we should have it. Every good school should have all this facility. Actually, in due course of time, just as today we say that your good school should have physics laboratory, biology laboratory, and so on, a time must come when every good administrator says that you must have a laboratory for geography, history, mathematics, literature. Why not? It's very necessary, very important. So this is my suggestion for a laboratory building. Now there are many other educational materials like preparing worksheets, for example. Now EduComp is doing a lot of worksheets now And that also requires a lot of study. Cannot give all that, but it is a very important subject, how to make a worksheet. A good teacher should be able to prepare a good worksheet. There are many kinds of worksheets. Even EduComp is doing only one kind of worksheet, but that is not sufficient. Different children require different kinds of worksheets. And again, in a laboratory, you should have different kinds of worksheets. Take, for example, I was teaching at one time world history to children of age of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. This is the age limit. And I was teaching world history to them. I wrote 30 worksheets for teaching Indian history and 90 worksheets for the world history. Now, what did I do? It was my great experience in my own life. To prepare worksheets, a worksheet should not be very long one, first of all, because too long is like a textbook. Textbooks are available, general books are available, reference books are available, then why a worksheet at all? Worksheet is a very interesting tool of underlining and of questioning in such a way that the child glides into the questions. It's not like exercise at the end of the textbook. Every lesson has got a lot of exercises at the end. It's the most bothersome thing in the world.
And explodes on nobody's and explodes on his own.
Yes. A good worksheet is one in which questions are glided into. The child glides into the question. I'll give one example. Yuan Sung came to India in the 7th century from China to India. Did he have a geographical map with him when he came to India? A question mark. Second was, did he have world map with him? Remember, Columbus discovered America in 1492. That's all. He'll be able to answer the question, did he have the world map? In 7th century, he came to India. Did he have the world map? And then I put only one answer, one statement. Remember, Columbus discovered America in 1492. Child will feel quite happy to answer this question. I mean, he'll learn, and in one question itself, three, four interests will be awakened. Yuan Sung came from China to India. What was his itinerary? It's a very interesting question. Did he have the map at all? What is the need of map? Do all the travelers have maps? Did he have the map at all? And you don't know how to come from China to India at that time when there was water. What are the means of vehicles at that time? How many questions arise in the mind of the child by the very fact that you put only three lines of questions? These are called what are called heuristic worksheets. There are informative worksheets, program worksheets. These are heuristic worksheets. Heuristic worksheets are those which enable students to discover. They incite a child to do is to discover. Heuristic is, I discovered, that is the Archimedes, when he discovered in his bathroom,
Eureka.
Eureka. The heuristic comes from that Eureka, I discovered. So when you have these worksheets of this kind, you discover, the child discovers, and you should give the joy of that discovery to the child. So to write worksheets of this kind is a very special quality, and not everybody can do it. But a good school of yours should appoint somebody who is imaginative to create heuristic worksheets for children for every subject. This is a big innovation. Heuristic worksheets for every subject, even literature. There are so many interesting things in literature which we don't get to underline at all, but heuristic worksheets can do it. And literature becomes a tremendous ocean of joy if you go through those worksheets. You should, of course, have a good reference books library around you. And then you put questions and you can say, if you don't find here, you read this, you read that. It gives you an insight into how to make discoveries. Now, final point of this particular subject. There are three methods of learning a subject. You learn when something is demonstrated. It is learning by witnessing a demonstration. Now, in a sense, a good lecturer is a demonstrator. When you lecture nicely, you are exhibiting, demonstrating to the audience your mind, how your mind functions and how you correlate ideas and underlining so many things. It's a kind of a demonstration. But at present, our demonstration stops there. There are many other ways by which you can demonstrate. Now, our school should be a kind of a laboratory for demonstrations. How to demonstrate different subjects to students. At present, for example, we have got a computer, so demonstration becomes much easier. You have films, you've got various kinds of so many documentaries, and so many small booklets also are being available. Lots of demonstrations are possible. We do not know, for example, that a dramatic rehearsal is very good for learning a language. It is not only for your cultural show at the end of the year, but we don't make use of dramas for that purpose. We don't take children to a rehearsal room because there is no such room available at all, first of all. That's why I'm pointing out to her, you should have a rehearsal room where you can rehearse a drama. One rehearsal experience of a child in life is a tremendous incentive to pronounce correctly. And how many children suffer from this disability of pronunciation? The clarity of pronunciation, the pitch of pronunciation, the tonality of pronunciation. How difficult it is, we realize when a child is rehearsing something. And we don't give this chance to children at all, excepting some very bright children who can speak at home. But many children do not know how to have tonality. And even some children don't know how to speak politely, how to make a request, how to make a command, how to make irresistible requests. We very often make a request which will be resisted, but how to make irresistible requests? A good teacher of conversation gives demonstrations to children how to take a telephone. Today I find that many people don't know how to talk on the telephone. This is not the way of talking on the telephone. You talk politely, nicely, welcomingly. And why can't you do it? Why don't you give pleasure of your voice to the other person when you talk on the telephone? No, it's very interesting. Why? Because we don't have such minute things to be told to children, that when you talk on a telephone, remember that the other person doesn't see you. And he must realize that he is welcome, that you are welcome. Your telephone should give you the sense that you are welcome. You are not thrown away. You are not a reception booth. It's not somebody has come to ask you for information, you can give an answer, this is the information. It's not that. It's a conversation. And a conversation should be polite conversation, pleasant conversation, interesting conversation, informative conversation, a conversation in which you are enriched. You feel happy, a bond is established. Like Anjali ji, when she speaks, it is a wonderful, you should learn how she speaks on the telephone. I have learned a lot from her. How she speaks on telephone, it is so polite, even when she has to disagree with the person, you can see how she disagrees with the person and politely gives a suggestion as to what should not happen again. It's true, I mean, this is a part of language learning. It's a part of language learning. A teacher who is teaching language should be able to tell, you know, in Taittiriya Upanishad, the very first lesson is Uccharanam. It's very interesting. Taittiriya Upanishad is the manual of Indian education system. She is working on the, actually she has written a paper on this subject already. The education material, the manual, first manual that is available is Taittiriya Upanishad. And there it is said how you should commence your teaching process. Uccharanam. And then it says pitch of the word, tone of the word, the length of the word, the breath of the word, and the breathing in the word. These are very important elements of your Uccharanam. In our present system, there is no place for it at all. It's a systematic, scientific way of teaching a language involves all this. So use of drama, demonstration, is very important. How a drama, a good actor, when he pronounces, what difference does it make? The same dialogue spoken by a lethargic man and a heroic man, what difference does it make? Demonstration. How to be present by demonstration. How to give a good command. There are times when commands are of different kinds. Napoleon sitting on his horseback and giving a charge to the soldiers of one kind, but sitting in his desk and commanding all his officers is quite different. And yet, what are commands? Demonstration of this kind are very important. Demonstration of recitations. Good teacher always recites very well. It is understood. And therefore we say all teachers have to tell kids how to recite well. No. School must organize recitation programs officially.
Please tell us about your dramas and recitations.
Yeah, as societies, and that we have dramatics, elocution, in which we do.
We do this. Good. So it should be
an inter-house competition.
Uncle, the school is buzzing with all this all the time, so that the children and the teachers actually have no time, because besides academics, all this is being done in a huge amount.
So
in fact, the city
minus out all that I'm saying, which you are doing already, but what I'm saying is that I find that there is a difference between doing these activities and doing them for demonstration purposes. The pedagogical use of the same. Many things happen because they are good schools. Many more dramatic sessions are there. But to use something pedagogically, that is to say, deliberately organizing a dramatic performance for the purpose of teaching, has a different angle to it, that you watch this drama from this point of view, you rehearse this program from this point of view. So anyway, you may be doing, you may not be doing, but I am only suggesting that it is good to think of it. Second method of teaching is discovery method. We must have in our school discovery problems. And today, the world is abounding with discoveries. So many discoveries have happened during the last 300 years that one can have a long list of discoveries. And even if you select 20, 25 discoveries and give the real demonstration of these discoveries, it will be a very powerful instrument of education. To make a distinction between discovery and invention, and to give demonstrations of inventions. A good school should have programs of demonstrating inventions or even participating. You give a problem, you know invention was made by somebody. You tell the children, look, invention has been made already on this subject, but I give the problem, invent. Such examples should be collected by one who is in charge of innovations in education. And it is not a work of one person. He can only stimulate. Actually, all teachers ultimately have to participate. In fact, when I speak of this 4-5 person specially designed, it is only to give a special task so that it can be spread among all. Ultimately, everybody has to participate. Then only the school can really come to the right level. So I will stop on this subject of educational innovations. As I said, innovations regarding objectives, methods, and third is content, which is a very large subject, which I'll take up later on. The innovations regarding contents of education is a very difficult subject.